This episode is brought to you by Odmo's Pizza in Cambie. Handmade awesome pizza plus craft beer, wine, and cider. Delivered. Call them today at 503-263-8444.
Welcome to Now Hear This, Cambie,
your source for news.
The threat of a possible teacher strike was avoided this week.
There's a new irresistibly cute creature winning over fans, and its name is Scootaloo.
Sports?
It's like Lucy in the football. You want to kick a field goal, but they take it away from you.
We had to learn how to win.
Goal can't be in the last second of the game!
And interesting conversations.
Because I'm one of the strongest girls ever, and I know that for a fact.
I just really enjoy writing gossip as if I was a bear.
With an old maid daughter that make the best moonshine in the coast.
If it would have hit me in the face, I think I would have died. I really do.
I guarantee you would have died, man. Are you kidding me?
Newcomer David Bajorin was appointed to the Cambie City Council Wednesday night, replacing Marine veteran Jordan Tibbles. With another service member, Bajorin is a 13-year veteran of the U.S. Coast Guard and Reserve. The decision came after more than 2.5 hours of discussion and interviews of the many suitors for the role. An even dozen had applied for the position, but two dropped out before the meeting began. The appointment of Bajorin, who is an HVAC technician for Roth Heating and Cooling and a father of two, was something of a surprise, as conventional wisdom would likely have favored the more experienced Jason Patton, a former counselor, Cambie Budget Committee Chair, and current Planning Commissioner. Patton had sought the seat during the previous appointment process and campaigned for it in the general election last November, often aligning with progressive counselors Sarah Spoon and Chris Bangs, while the more conservative trio of Tibbles, Council President Tracy Hensley, and James Hebe ran together. Bangs admitted Patton had been at the top of the list before Wednesday night's interviews, and Spoon also expressed her appreciation but admitted she didn't want him to lose him on planning commission, saying, quote, "He is so good there." Bajorin leaned heavily on his military experience in making his case for the job.
I excel under pressure and duress because that's how most of my working life has been. I spent most of my career in the Coast Guard doing search and rescue. I'm still serving in the reserves now, 13 years in. So everything else seems a little easier by comparison after everything I've been through, heavy weather environment, surf environment, saving lives and, you know, nature's worst.
He also made a strong call for unity, both within the city and the council, and promised that he would be someone who would help get things done and move the community forward.
You know, some would expect me to say things like allocation of funding to improving the city infrastructure or something more specific, like water or emergency response. And that's not the case here today, although those things are all important. I spoke to it last time I was in front of City Council, but COVID seems to have brought out the worst in all of us, whether because of stress, uncertainty, or misinformation. Now, some of our worst traits have come out in ways we never anticipated. We're better than that, and we all know. The fires and the ice storm showed that in abundance. I had a quarter of a tree fall on top of my work van during the ice storm, and within 20 minutes, there were three neighbors with chainsaws cutting it to pieces, while those not on chainsaws helped me move the chunks off the road. And that's the spirit that Cambie possesses in abundance.
Though he was ultimately appointed by a near unanimous vote, Bajorin was not the first candidate to be put forward Wednesday night. Hensley made the first motion, nominating Hebe, who had also applied for the position. Hebe finished fifth, just behind Tibbles, in the hotly contested November runoff. And though he had earned only 8 votes more than Patton, a difference of 0.2%, Hensley argued that this should be the deciding factor. Hebe's appointment failed 2-3, with Hensley and Councillor Sean Varwig in favor. Varwig then moved to appoint Brad Clark, a pastor and longtime librarian for the city of Wilsonville, who had also made a stirring case for unity and nonpartisanship on the council. Both Bangs and Spoon expressed admiration for Clark, but admitted that they had other candidates they felt would be a better fit for the city's needs. In an apparent miscue, Hensley then attempted to put forth another motion before the vote on Clark had actually taken place. She did not, however, nominate Patton, whom the Cambie electorate gave 4,262 votes last November, but instead reached for Sidney Lang, who had not been on the ballot. Clark's appointment was also turned down on a 2-3 vote, setting up Spoon's motion for Bajorin. Varwig, surprised by joining the progressive bloc and supporting the newcomer, saying he hoped it would allow this council to move forward. Hensley was the lone vote against Bajorn, which he defended by saying, again, that the council should have followed the electorate.
I just feel that we should have gone with Mr. Heeb because he was the constituent's choice in the election, and I am elected to represent our constituency, and so therefore I feel like I'm representing them now, so that is why I'm voting no tonight.
But Spoon pushed back, pointing out that most of the candidates for the vacancy had not been on the ballot in November, so it was impossible to guess whom voters would have preferred. She also referred to the controversial decision by the then-conservative majority, including Hensley, to appoint right-wing attorney Tyler Smith to a vacancy in late October 2016, less than 2 weeks before a general election in which the voters could have had their say in who should fill the seat. Bajorn, who will be sworn at the next council meeting October 20th and will serve through December 2022.
A massive four-alarm blaze erupted in downtown Mount Angel early Saturday morning, destroying a former granary and several businesses and pulling in over 100 firefighters from across the region. The fire was discovered at 12:48 a.m. by Mount Angel police, and arriving fire crews found the buildings already heavily involved in the 200 block of South Main, just south of the community's charming Bavarian-themed downtown core. The Mount Angel Fire District said the response to the four-alarm fire involved 120 firefighters and 35 pieces of equipment from Mount Angel, Silverton, Woodburn, Hubbard, Monitor, St. Paul, and Marion County Fire District. It took an estimated 1 million gallons of water to bring the blaze under control, Mount Angel officials said. The fire destroyed or damaged four buildings. No injuries were reported. The site, once an outlet for Wilco Farm Stores, housed the Blackbird Granary, an antique business hosting over 40 vendors. KP's Harvest Time Produces, Wood Pellet Products, and Hidden Bed of Oregon, the fire agency reported. I am in shock and I have no words, the Blackbird Granary posted on its Facebook page at 3:24 a.m. I am heartbroken and praying that all the firefighters are safe. The cause of the fire is under investigation. Constructed circa 1912, the building was originally the North Schmaltz & Sons warehouse and sold a variety of goods including coal, fence posts, drain tile, shingles, cement, lime, gravel and grain. A gas station was added later, and by 1940, Farmers Union Warehouse had taken ownership. It evolved into Wilco Farm Co-op, with a retail store, fertilizer plant, grain elevator, and grass seed cleaning operation. Wilco used the building until 2002. The structure remained vacant until Tammy Davis opened the Blackbird Granary in 2014. The business was totally destroyed in the Saturday morning blaze. A GoFundMe campaign to support the owners has raised nearly $4,000 as of Sunday.
A man was arrested Wednesday afternoon after leading the police on a high-speed pursuit through Cambie, crashing on Knightsbridge Road, and fleeing onto the grounds of the Grove Camp and Retreat Center. The incident began at approximately 4 p.m. when the vehicle, a Nissan pickup, was spotted by a Cambie patrol officer on Highway 99E near Territorial Road, driving at approximately 80 miles per hour in a 45 zone. The driver, later identified by police as 39-year-old Davis Campos, turned onto North Birch and careened toward the Knightsbridge Road, where another Cambie officer had deployed spike strips. Campos was allegedly driving recklessly and struck several curbs on Birch Street before losing control on Knightsbridge and crashing into some brush just past the conference center. Campos then reportedly fled on foot into the Grove, which is also known as Cambie Grove and the surrounding neighborhoods. A resident Ring home security camera picked up the suspect and shared the video with law enforcement, which provided a location and direction of travel. An officer stationed near Barlow Road finally intercepted Campos, bringing the pursuit to an end. The suspect failed to comply with officers' commands and was subdued with a taser. Captain Doug Kitzmiller said Cambie police are not sure why the suspect ran. He had a valid driver's license, no active warrants, and nothing illegal was found in search of Campos' vehicle. Campos was lodged at the Clackamas County Jail on charges of eluding a police officer and attempting to elude, reckless driving, and a hit and run. Bail is set at $40,000.
See him
Clackamas Community College has found that students from underrepresented populations are more likely to drop out of college before earning a degree or certificate. And this is particularly true of students enrolled during the pandemic. Research has shown that additional one-on-one support can help these students persist and succeed. To that end, CCC was awarded a three-year grant totaling $391,931 from the Oregon Higher Education Coordinating Commission's Re-Engagement and Retention Initiative, which will expand the college's existing retention efforts, including personalized attention and connections. The grant specifically prioritizes connecting with students who were enrolled between March of 2020 and now, but stopped attending CCC. From winter term to spring term in 2020, 3,667 CCC applicants did not enroll, enrolled but dropped out, or did not complete spring term. The grant will fund two part-time positions. One will help students who are low socioeconomic status, first-generation immigrants and/or students of color, and certificate-seeking but stopped attending CCC just prior to and/or during the pandemic. The second will help students who were enrolled and/or attended GED/adult high school diploma programs or the English for Speakers of Other Languages program. This position will also provide outreach to prospective students who need assistance with getting started in these programs. CCC says grants like these offer enormous returns on investment, reporting every dollar of support provided to CCC students offers a return of $1.60 over the course of the students' working careers in the form of higher tax receipts and avoided costs. Students will also see significant personal rates of return and stability by furthering their education. As of June, 12% of people with less than a high school diploma are unemployed, compared to 9% who have a high school diploma, 8% who have some college, and 7% who have an associate's degree.
During the halftime of the Canby Cougars' 42-6 blowout victory over the visiting Hillsboro Spartans, balloons were on the mind of the homecoming court. Each of the hopefuls held a box with balloons in it, which they opened simultaneously on the count of three. Most of the balloons that soared skyward were blue, but one, and only one, was Canby Gold, denoting the senior class pick for homecoming king and queen. After opening their box, Kadrin Vockrot and Tate Leader looked around to see who had won the coveted title. No one was more surprised than them to see the golden orb hovering above their heads. The newly crowned homecoming queen said that she had to do a double take, saying, quote, "I literally couldn't grasp the fact that I had won." Vockrot and Leader had been good friends throughout high school, and when Vockrot was chosen to be one of the homecoming court, she did not hesitate to pick Leader as her escort. Both sing in the Canby Cantilenas Choir, while Leader is senior class president and Vockrot is on the varsity tennis team and a member of the Canby High School Theater. Both the king and queen were grateful to see the most beloved homecoming traditions return after a two-year COVID-induced hiatus. "I think I speak for us all at Canby when I say that we are grateful that homecoming's back," said Leader. "We were able to bring back most, if not all, of the traditions that we used to do a couple years ago." Vockrot plans on attending community college next year before working towards a degree in pediatric psychology. Leader plans to attend BYU Idaho before embarking on a two-year mission for his church. For photos from homecoming week at Canby High School, visit our website, canbyfirst.com, or follow the Canby Current on Facebook and Instagram.
Cougar Country, hometown sports coverage is brought to you by Rife and Hunsaker. PC, when you need an attorney, turn to the firm Canby has trusted for over 50 years. Call them today at 503-266-3456. For the latest sports news, follow us on Twitter, at Cougar Country. Another week, another easy win for the 5th-ranked Canby Cougar football team, which made quick work of visiting Hillsboro on homecoming night Thursday to stay undefeated in league play. Driven by the tireless work of the team's front line on both sides of the ball, the high-powered Cougar offense and stout Canby defense breezed to a 35-0 halftime lead en route to a 42-6 victory over the Spartans. It was the Cougs' fourth straight game, putting more than 40 points on the board while holding their opponents fewer than 14. It's also the first homecoming win in 5 years for the Cougs, who improved to 5-1 overall and 4-0 in the NWOC West. Super sophomore Tyler Kendold was again the tip of the spear for the Cougar attack, piling up 146 yards and a score on only 8 carries, while senior Bryce Oliver added 91 rushing yards and punched in 2 touchdowns. After the gang, Oliver sang the praise of the hardworking Hogs on the offensive line. "They've been studly," Oliver said. "They have created holes that I can get through. They're all doing a really good job, and I have so much appreciation for them." Senior quarterback Mikey Gibson would finish the night 2 out of 5 for 59 yards and 2 touchdowns, his fourth game in a row of at least 2 scores through the air. Kemby's winning streak is the longest for the Cougars since 2012, and their 5-1 start is the school's best in well over a decade. But next week will be a real test as the Cougs hit the road for a top 10 showdown with number 9 Skip Hoos. Kickoff's at 7 p.m. In girls soccer action this week, practice and progress finally came together for the team this week as they clinched their first win of the season against St. Mary's Academy. A quick Blues goal put the Cougars down 1-0 early on, but they soon rallied, led by senior Ashley Peterson's 2 goals. Freshman Kendall Johnson added one more in the 3-2 victory. "We were finally playing as a team," said senior Mallory Scott. "We're able to string together passes easily through the middle field and the wings. It's what we've been practicing, but we're finally able to execute." Canby will look back at Cougar Stadium for a 3-game homestand after 2 straight weeks on the road, facing the Tualatin Timberwolves on Monday and undefeated Lake Oswego Lakers Wednesday. Canby Volleyball had their hands full this week against the Tiger Tigers and Tualatin Timberwolves, dropping both games despite putting up a fierce fight. Canby was inches away from victory Tuesday, leading Tiger 2-0, but the Tigers battled fiercely back, winning 3 straight sets to clinch the victory. And the Cougars were unable to counter a strong Timberwolf attack on homecoming night Thursday, as Tualatin iced the match in 3 straight sets. After appearing to have turned a corner, Canby is now in the midst of a brutal 5-game slide and has won only 3 total sets in the last 2 weeks of 3 Rivers League play. The Cougars hope to change the tides next week, but that will be no small feat against the number 2 ranked West Lynn Lions Tuesday. After that, they'll head to Portland to take on St. Mary's. Finally, the Canby men's soccer team had just 1 game on the schedule this week, but it was a doozy. And then the Cougs showed vast improvement in their second go-around with the best team in the 3 Rivers League. The outcome was the same, with the undefeated Lake Ridge Pacers taking home the 4-0 victory. Canby will try to get back on track by beginning a 3-game road trek next week, starting with Tualatin on Monday and Lake Oswego on Wednesday.
Are you a healthcare hero? Do you want to become one? Are you looking for a position where you are valued, your time is your own, and you have ample opportunity for growth? Marquee companies at Hope Village in Canby, Oregon offers all of that and more. They are currently hiring nurses, caregivers, CNAs, and enrolling students in their free CNA course. From competitive wages and up to $25,000 tuition reimbursement to flexible schedules and the opportunity to make a positive impact on someone's life, Marquee at Hope Village is the right place for you. Take your career to the next level and apply now to become a valued team member at Marquee at Hope Village in Canby. To learn more or apply today, text CURRENT, that's C-U-R-R-E-N-T, to 888-906-3432.
Over 70 years ago, a seed was planted in the rich, fertile soil of North Canby. The seed was Swan Island dahlias, and today it has blossomed and grown into the largest leading dahlia grower on planet Earth. Family owned and operated, Swan Island is one of Oregon's premier agrotourism destinations, boasting 375 varieties and 40 acres of gorgeous blooms. A sea of color that is among the most jaw-dropping and unforgettable sights in the entire Pacific Northwest. While their fields and annual Dahlia Festival justifiably get a lot of attention, Swan Island has a lot of amenities you may not know about. Their selection of gifts, gardening supplies, and other unique finds is among the most expansive in Canby area, and their fresh cut flower shop, it's always worth stopping for. This summer, Swan Island is featuring a rotating menu of delicious food trucks Thursday through Sunday and a wide variety of fun classes for all interests and ability levels. The Dahlia Farm will also be hosting a local farmers market every Friday and live music shows through September. Swan Island and their amazing dahlia fields are open 6 days a week, 9 a.m. to 5:30 p.m., closed Wednesdays. For class registration, concert schedule or more information, visit dahlias.com or follow Swan Island Dahlias on Facebook and Instagram.
Joining us on the Cami Conversation today is Bill King of King's Farm to Table. Hi, Bill.
How you doing?
Good.
Good.
Unfortunately, we're not joining you from King's Farm to Table today, because then I might be able to taste delicious stuff. But we are at Gwen's Coffee House. I was telling Bill before we started recording that it's, I think, been my first interview at Gwen's since the pandemic. It's been almost 2 years. So.
Thank you.
King's Farm to Table is an existing business in Wilsonville, but is relocating to Cami.
That's correct. We've been, we've had a farm stand, kind of good old fashioned farm stand, on Stafford Road for 3 years.
Okay.
So we were just north of Wilsonville, between Wilsonville and Lake Oswego. And
we had
what I called a micro farm. It was about a 7,000 square foot garden. Mm-hmm. So we did a lot of our own heirloom tomatoes primarily, but we did some other things. But we tried to grow things that weren't, you couldn't get anywhere else, that you certainly weren't going to be able to get in a grocery store.
Uh-huh.
So we did that, and then we bought from local farmers, most of whom actually were here from here in Cami, although we did have quite a bit of tree fruit and melons, etc., from Hood River out to Hermiston, but everything was local.
Yeah.
And then we had some dry goods and we had some gifts and so on, and then on the weekends I did American Regional Barbecue out on the patio, so that was a big hit and something that we're going to continue here at the Cami Market. Mm-hmm. So yeah, this evolution of my career is about 4 years old.
Tell us a little bit about your background. You're a chef.
I am a chef. I've been in the business for over 50 years. Which dates me, but that's cool. I started on the East Coast.
Good experience.
I grew up in Wilmington, Delaware, just south of Philadelphia. Mm-hmm. And after high school, I went to Cornell University, just a school, hotel and restaurant administration, and started working in kitchens straight out of high school, and decided after college that I wanted to move west. So my best friend and I moved out here. We settled in Eugene. And then I've been working my way up the valley ever since. In the 80s, I was the executive chef at the old Aurora Colony Inn. Back when Aurora was, real happening antiquing area, and Aurora Colony Inn was kind of the spot there. So I was there for 3 years, and then an opportunity to open a little bistro and charcuterie in a new marketplace in Portland called the Yamho Marketplace. And so we did that for 3 years until light rail construction started and passed directly on the opposite sides of the market building, which was a full city block, and turned the place into a war zone.
Yes.
Put us all out of business. There were probably 100, maybe 70, 80, 100 merchants there.
Yeah.
But I had a little French cafe and charcuterie there for 3 years, which I loved very much and was something that I had wanted to continue to do over time. But when that closed, I picked up an opportunity to go to work for the McCormick & Schmick's restaurant group back when we had 6 restaurants. And I was a chef with them, and ultimately a regional chef and a corporate chef and vice president of culinary development. Anyway, when I started, we had 6 restaurants. When we left, we had 96.
Wow.
So that was a big deal. That was 25 years of my professional life, some of the absolute best years of my life, back when McCormick & Schmick's was still run by us from the very earliest stages.
Yeah.
And before it was taken over by a corporate guy from Houston.
Yeah.
At which time I got out of there as quick as I could. Had my own restaurant in Portland for just a little while, and then I moved to Minneapolis for 3 years and helped a restaurant grow some restaurants, and got tired of being away from our kids and our grandkids, so, and my wife wanted to get back to a real estate business, and so we moved back here. And so we've been back now 7 years, almost 7 years, and then we had the opportunity to open the farm stand in Wilsonville, which was just about as much fun as we could possibly have. We just loved it so much.
Yeah, to get your hands dirty.
Yeah, you know, we really did, literally in both ways. First of all, I hadn't been a cooking chef for quite a while. But then I went...
It's kind of like riding a bike, wasn't it?
It was. We got back in. I started doing a lot of take-home prepared foods.
Yeah.
And then the barbecue. I did American Regional Barbecue there.
Yeah.
Which was just really just really rewarding how well we connected with the community and how much... we just had so much fun there and just made so many new friends. It was a very, very nice experience.
Nice.
Unfortunately, after 3 years, the owners of the property... they didn't want to lease it anymore. They're building a house on the back portion of it, and our business was, I guess, intrusive to them to a degree. Anyway, lease was up, so we started looking. And, you know, our first thoughts were to replicate the farm stand concept, but that kind of real estate was very difficult to find.
Yeah.
And what I really had wanted to do all the way back to my bistro charcuterie days before McCormick and Schmick's was that I wanted to own a market.
Yeah.
And I always imagined, I guess a lot of people are familiar with the Elephant's Delicatessen in Portland.
Yeah.
Very, very successful
yeah.
and very, very ambitious.
Yeah.
Not what, so I'm looking to do kind of a miniature version of that in a nice, quiet, lovely town. We're just very excited about Canby. We just honestly can't believe how quickly people are embracing us. We go into shops, we introduce ourselves, everybody just talks about what a great town it is and how community centric it is, and that just speaks to who we are and who we want to be. And then they tell us that they feel like what we're going to do here is, you know, going to really fill a void.
Yes.
you know, maybe bring some food that might not be around right now.
It's this bizarre thing in Canby. We had we had a number of downtown consultants over the years, but a couple years ago before the pandemic, who among the different, you know, kind of suggestions and things as an outside person coming in and sort of things that stood out to her was this bizarre disconnect between all of these farms completely surrounding Canby, producing all kinds of amazing produce and meat and dairy products, some of them known nationally, like TMK Creamery, you know, award-winning.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And then you come to the town and all the food comes from elsewhere, you know, and some of that's starting to change. Obviously, we do have some locally owned restaurants that even at that time were and are continuing to use, you know, some local products, kind of incorporate that into the recipes. Wayward Sandwiches across the street here from Gwen came online after this consultant and does a lot of that as well. But even still, it is sort of this, you know, Thriftway has some local stuff at the Sports Market, I should say. But it is still a void, and it is weird. It is not something that's easily explainable as far as, like, you know, why that food goes somewhere else instead of the closest town.
Yeah, well, I can't explain it. All I can do is try to help fill the void a little bit, you know.
Yeah.
So we'll we won't be as produce oriented as we were. That was primarily what we did at the farm center. In this case, we're going to take the swing and be primarily focused on my prepared foods.
Okay.
So I like to think of it as country store meets urban deli.
Okay.
We'll have all kinds of prepared entrees and salads and
it'll be sort of a counter service type
deal?
Okay.
It'll be just like walking up to the deli counter.
Will you have tables? Will you serve?
No food service inside.
It'll be a store. Okay.
Yeah, it'll be strictly a market. So we'll have all the prepared foods, but we will do some specialty produce almost all of it from the Cambie area, although we'll continue to buy tree fruit and melons from Hood River and Hermiston.
Okay.
But the rest of it, one of our primary providers over the last three years was Martinez Family Farm out off of Barlow Road.
Yeah.
And then South Barlow Berries and Jane Grigson. And anyway, so quite a few people from local, and we hope to even expand that. And
awesome.
Then and then we'll have dry goods like honeys and jams and preserves and pickles and things like that. So we'll have that kind of thing. So a little produce, a little dry goods, but primarily fresh, local prepared foods.
Wonderful. Yeah. Bill, can you tell us a little bit about, do you have a certain specialty dishes or specialty entrees or certain kind of types of cuisine that you think you'll really feature for folks that aren't? I know you have a large following through your farm stand and people that are excited to see you moving right here to Cambie. So for folks that aren't as familiar with your background. And
so I think my hope is that we'll be able to reach a broad demographic of food interests. I know there's, a lot of folks that have been around for a long time. They maybe got slightly more conservative food interests. Mm-hmm. So things like, simple home style comfort foods like meatloaf, pot roast, mac and cheese will be available. But we'll also go to the other end of the spectrum and try to speak to some of the more contemporary interests that are coming to town and some of the new generation of folks moving in. But to kind of pinpoint a specific style, the answer is actually no. It's going to be a very broad spectrum of styles. I like to do Italian work. I've got a deep background in French food, American regional food. Of course, the barbecue will be a major focus. So we're going to try to provide the broadest possible spectrum to appeal to a wide variety of interests.
Yeah, yeah. You didn't talk about the barbecue. That's a big thing. Tell me about that.
It's a big thing. So on the weekends at our farm stand in Stafford, I did American Regional Barbecue for the last 2 years we were there. And the excitement was pretty exciting for us. I mean, the folks... it was one of those things where we opened the gates to open the store into the
people
parking
lined up
lot.
With their bibs on it.
People, cars were lined up. Yeah. We had to kind of make arrangements to get them off the street, let them in early, and say, "Folks, I'm not quite ready. I'm going to get you ready as fast as I can." But that, I mean, how great can that be? That was great. We just loved it. So I did, so I said American regional style, I did Texas style brisket. And Western North Carolina pulled pork. There's several different styles of pulled pork from the Carolinas. I did a Western North Carolina style, which is a kind of a mixture of a part vinegar, part tomato-based sauce.
Yeah.
So we did the Carolina pork, the Texas barbecue brisket. And then I did, I had a great recipe from a chef friend of mine in Tennessee for kind of a slightly mustardy barbecue sauce that I did on baby back ribs, so we did those. And then we did St. Louis ribs with a Memphis dry rub. And then we would do barbecue roasted chicken with, every week I'd do a different fruit-based, Northwest fruit-based barbecue sauce. So we had four or five different things.
Yeah.
And kind of every week it was a different product that was most popular.
Love it.
And we'd sell out, and we would sell out in 2 or 3 hours.
Yeah. Yeah.
So that was, it was great. I couldn't make enough.
Yeah.
I mean, I could only make as much as I could make.
Yeah.
And it sold out, usually 3 or 4 hours before the farm stand closed.
So you say you're going to continue that here.
Yes.
Is that something where you'll prep it somewhere off-site?
Yeah. Okay. We'll do the barbecue off-site because I don't have access to space.
Yeah.
Here, and we'll bring it
be
in.
Be up on the roof or something? No. I guess we haven't told people your location yet. You're going to be at the Holly Mall.
Well, thank you, the Holly Mall. Oh, and by the way, it's 241 North 2nd Avenue in the Holly Mall. And I was just told today
in between what used to be Sunshine Athletics and
I think it was an insurance company maybe
on the and what end. Used to be Allstate Insurance.
Yeah, right.
That's right. Yeah, and I'm like, what is there? Oh wait, that's what used to be.
And those two spaces are still empty, so we're going to fill the void and hope people come running.
Yes, absolutely. Well, I want to come back. You know, we'll be wrapping up here pretty quick, but your cell phone went off, and when that happens to one of my guests, I get to ask you extra questions.
I apologize. That's the bonus. That marks the bonus.
But back to your background a little bit, you have been recognized with a number of awards. You've had some media appearances. Tell us about that.
I've been very fortunate in my career. So just for the record, and embarrassing to you know, talk about it too much, but I was the Oregon Seafood Chef of the Year back in the late 80s. I was the consulting chef for the state and did a bunch of things down in Salem over the years. I've done a lot of appearances on AM Northwest and Afternoon Live on TV, and I used to do a regular TV show with Bill Gallagher on the radio.
Cool.
I've won a couple of gold medals, a couple silver medals in national culinary competitions, although I've never really wanted to be a competition chef, but kind of got talked into doing those and was fortunate enough to do fairly well. I've cooked at the James Beard House a couple of times, and that's enough.
Yeah,
that's okay. I'm not going any further than that.
Yeah, listed on your website somewhere. Maybe,
right.
Exactly. Well, the last thing I wanted to ask you, and that was kind of setting the stage for this, but just you know, you've talked about your different work experience, you know, all kinds of different things that you've done. I'm really interested to hear what has led you to where you are now, as far as that focus on the local and the farm to table, because you've seen all kinds of different aspects. You've seen the corporate model and the restaurant model, and I guess is it something in terms of the sustainability, the quality, column A, column B? What has led you to what
I think
you
it's
now?
Kind of all of the above. Yeah. I think part of it was that after almost 30 years in the corporate world, I wanted to do something much simpler.
Okay.
And I wanted it to be something that was my own and my family's.
Yeah.
This is very much a family business. My wife is actively involved. My two of my three kids are supported, and in fact, my daughter ran the farm stand for the first year that we were open. I wanted something simpler. I wanted something that we could call our own.
Yep.
And I wanted something that really make a connection to the local community and local farming. And we just kind of stumbled into it at the farm stand and figured it out as we went along. But it was just such a really a rewarding experience to be connected to the rural areas, to the farms themselves, to the community, and again to be able to be doing something that we could call our own and keep it kind of simple.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, Bill King, it has been so great to have you on today. If you would tell folks sort of what your timeline is,
You know, as it so often is, timelines are dictated by construction issues.
Yep.
I am somewhat optimistic, but encouraged to think that we're going to be open by the second or third week of August.
Okay.
So not too far.
Yeah. Awesome. Where can folks find you online or find information, updates about what's going on?
KingsFarmToTable.com. And we will have our website updated with all the new information about the new store, Kings Farm to Table, Canby Market.
Yep, yep. And Kings Farm to Table on Facebook, got a good presence there. That's how we initially hooked up.
We're very blessed with a lot of followers.
Yes.
And we do communicate real well on Facebook. So definitely look for information there.
Awesome. Well, Bill, thank you again for being on today. We're so excited to have you in Canby. Look forward to trying some of that barbecue as soon as we can.
We are thrilled, and thank you so much for thinking of me.
Hi, I'm Megan Waterman. I'm the owner and operator of the Book Nook in Canby, Oregon.
And I'm Tyler Clausen of Now Hear This Canby, the show you're listening to. Megan, the Book Nook is one of my favorite places in all of Canby. It's a one-stop shop for gifts, board games, new books, used books, and books from local authors. Why did you decide to open it?
Well, I love the power of a story. I love how reading about different people and places, times, stretches my mind. It makes me see the world differently, whether that's a fantasy story or a biography. It all changes the lens that I see and how I interact with people. The reason that we added games to our store is for that same reason. It's just a different way to experience story through gameplay.
And along with new selection, you're at a new location, right?
We are. We just moved, technically just across the intersection to the old Parsons building. We've expanded our space and also our selection. So we've got more books, more gifts. We added a larger gaming section. And now with the world opening back up a little bit more, we're starting to relaunch some of our events. We have relaunched our general fiction and our fantasy book clubs, and those are going great. And we're about ready to kick off game nights, starting with our beginner Dungeons & Dragons camp, led by Canby's very own Tyler Clausen.
Hey, that's me! If you're interested in D&D, make sure you stop by the Book Nook and get more information about role-playing opportunities there.
Yeah, or stop by anytime and chat with one of our booksellers about their current book recommendations and let us help you find your next favorite read. We're now open on Sundays as well, so we're there 7 days a week.
Nice. The Book Nook is in downtown Canby or online at booknookcanby.com. Now Hear This Canby is produced by me, Tyler Clausen. Our content director and star reporter is Tyler Frankie. And of course, our show is edited by Cameron Clausen. We also feature the vocal talents of Joy Struby and James Walden. So a round of applause to them. The song that you're hearing right now is Canby by singer-songwriter Olivia Harms, used with her permission. To find more work from her, you can visit her website olivia13.com.
Now Hear This Canby is dedicated to preserving independent local journalism and redefining local news with our fun, fresh, and energetic brand of storytelling. Our sincere thanks to our local sponsors who make this show possible. Please show your appreciation by supporting the small businesses who support us.
The production of Now Hear This Studios, Canby's locally owned, full-service audio, video, and media production company. Our mission is to produce the best content in the universe. And we'd love to help you do it. Find us online at nhtstudios.com.
I will take a motion to adjourn.
I just moved it.
I didn't even ask for it, though.
Hi, everyone. I wanted to take this moment to invite you personally to come and hang out with us for our end of season client event. It's a thank you to all the wonderful people we've done business with, as well as a welcome to a lot of our community. I'm doing this in partnership with Vanessa Zimmerman, Zimmerman team at Academy Mortgage. It's just kind of our way of saying thank you. We've really enjoyed getting to know you, doing business with you, etc. We'll be outside. We're sensitive to the fact that we're in COVID, still dealing with that. So it will be spread out. People will have room to breathe and sit and walk and talk. Reckless Company, if you've never heard them before, they're awesome. They're going to be playing. We'll have TMK here. I can't wait to try the corn dog. I've been waiting like 2 years to try this corn dog. So it looks amazing, and I've heard it's amazing, and I think there's quite a following. Also, they'll have all kinds of other food. We'll have beer and cider. Everything's hosted, of course, as a thank you. Again, it's for our clients. It's for our community. We really, really want to come and celebrate. We'll have swag for you, all kinds of fun things for the kids. We hope to see you on 9/16 from 4 to 8 in the afternoon.
Canby Then is brought to you by Retro Revival. They are not your average antique shop. They're open daily, and you can find them on the corner of Northwest 3rd and Grant Street in downtown Canby. If the city of Canby were a wheel, then Waite Park would be the hub. The city revolves around it. It is the host of many of the city's most popular and well-known events, from the Canby Independence Day celebration, once known as General Canby Days, to Light Up the Night, which draws thousands to downtown Canby each year to help ring in the holiday season. Today marks the start of a new series on Canby Then, looking at the history of the city's parks. They play a much more important role than you may realize. They are the places children play, yes, but one day those children grow up, and the lives they lead and the futures they build are shaped in no small part by the dreams that first began to take shape on the playgrounds of their youth. Waite is the city's oldest park. Though it was not officially deeded to the Canby until 1967, its history goes back much further than that. The property that would one day become Waite Park was part of the original 1870 plat for the city of Canby filed 150 years ago. It was part of the original donation land claim of Canby that founding father Philander Lee, the Oregon Trail pioneer who grew amazing whiskers, but also apples, which he shipped by train and sold to miners during the California Gold Rush. Just to the north was the claim of Aaron E. Waite, whose descendants would eventually own the land and donate it to the city, and after whom the park is named. Waite is a fascinating and influential figure in early Oregon history. It is well known that he was the first Chief Justice of the state's Supreme Court, but he was so much more than that. Aaron Waite was born in Whatley, Massachusetts, on the day after Christmas in 1813. His father was a soldier in the War of 1812, which actually lasted until 1815, and was killed in action shortly after Aaron was born. He was raised by his uncle and grandfather. At the age of 14, he became an apprentice broom maker in Hatfield and put the money he earned towards his own education. At age 20, he moved to Long Island, New York, where he taught country winter schools and was an assistant teacher in Erasmus Hall, though he would later confess he never really liked teaching. He eventually returned to Massachusetts before moving west in 1837 and settling in Centerville, Michigan. There, he befriended Judge Columbia Lancaster, who would also be influential in the early governance of both Oregon and Washington State. Young Aaron had taken an interest in political matters since he was a boy, a biographer once noted, and he had always been a Democrat. During the presidential campaign of 1844, he edited a Democratic paper in Michigan and afterwards held the office of military secretary in the cabinet of Governor John L. Berry. In the spring of 1847, Waite headed to the Oregon country in a wagon train of 40 ox-drawn wagons. His party included Judge Lancaster and Lancaster's small family. They arrived safely in mid-September of that year. Watchful care was exercised, and no serious accident nor difficulty occurred on the journey, Waite's biographer noted. Other than being tiresome, the journey was not an unpleasant one. The one colorful episode history preserves involved the spectacles Waite wore for nearsightedness. Native Americans who noticed the strange facial adornments asked what they were for, and Waite said they allowed him to see a long way off. The natives avoided him after that. They had misunderstood his explanation to mean that the spectacles made it so he could see anything, anywhere. Once in Oregon, he set up a law practice in Oregon City and entered into an agreement with Oregon's first governor, George Abernathy, to edit the fledgling Oregon Spectator. The Spectator was the first American newspaper west of the Rocky Mountains and would soon become the main paper of the region, used by politicians for public debate of the leading topics of the day. It had little competition. Before the Spectator, the only newspapers circulated in the territory were tiny pamphlets printed in San Francisco and Monterey, which were delivered by ship at random intervals, and, bizarrely, a paper based in Honolulu, Hawaii, which at the time was commonly known as the Sandwich Islands, for reasons that are much less hilarious than you might guess. Some folks also received letters and papers from the States once a year by immigrants coming down the Oregon Trail. When the Cayuse War broke out, sparked by the massacre of missionaries Marcus and Narcissa Whitman, whom Philander Lee and his family had met on their own journey to Oregon, Waite was appointed first assistant commissary under General Joel Palmer. While in that capacity, Waite was tasked with securing provisions for the troops in the field. No easy task. Legend has it that someone told him, "Go to God Almighty Smith." He was able to give. "He won't, but you try him." This Alvin Thompson God Almighty Smith was an accomplished carpenter on the Tualatin Plains, which we know now as the city of Forest Grove. He was, in the word of one historian, a serious man who did serious work. He was a devout Christian from his boyhood days. His nickname had been bestowed on him by the Indians, who heard his frequent prayers to God Almighty. And as one of his contemporaries, Dolly Hinman, would recall, quote, "Mr. Smith was a very stern man, keeping the Sabbath from sundown Saturday to sundown Sunday, and woe betide anyone who did not do likewise." Obviously, Aaron Waite had his work cut out for him. He arrived at Mr. Smith's late in the day and made his errand known. Never one to make a quick decision, Mr. Smith said, "You must stay with me all night, and we will talk it over." Well, old man Smith must have heard a still, small voice during his prayers that night, because he did indeed agree to furnish equipment for the soldiers in the field and rendered other aid. He even accompanied Waite to another settler's ranch near the foothills, where the two men procured a drove of hogs for the War Department and its hungry soldiers. God Almighty Smith's home still stands on Elm Street in modern-day Forest Grove. It is the second oldest building in the city and was added to the National Register of Historic Places in 1974. That house fell into disrepair and was even home to a meth lab in 2005, but was saved through the heroic fundraising efforts of the Friends of the Historic Forest Grove, which raised $175,000 to purchase and restore the property. Their efforts included, and I'm not kidding, a sexy calendar featuring members of the group in various nude poses. We were told it was quite tasteful. The name of the calendar, of course, was The History Buffs. God only knows what the good Alvin Smith would have thought about that. We'll have more to tell you about the adventures of Justice Aaron E. Waite and the Canby Park that bears his name, but it'll have to wait till next time on Canby Then.
Tyler, did you know that the Australian lyrebird can mimic any sound that it hears? Even chainsaws?
No, that's super interesting.
Did you know that a baby puffin is called a puffling? Or no. That baby sea otters can't swim, so their moms wrap them up in pieces of kelp until they learn how to paddle?
Wait, do you know any trivia that isn't like animal related?
Not really, but here's some stuff you may not know about the Wild Hare Saloon, where Canby goes to eat and have fun.
Okay.
The Wild Hare is one of Canby's longest running locally owned restaurants. Owners Joan and Darren Moden have been in business for 16 years.
That's cool.
Yeah, heck, you were just a baby back then. And they love to give back. They've been members of the Canby Chamber for that long, and they donate over $20,000 to local sports, FFA programs, and civic organizations each year.
Wow, I'm legitimately like caught off. That's cool.
Yeah. They also support more than 30 jobs in the community through their award-winning staff, some of them as young as 18. Hey, that's older than you are.
Dude, I'm I'm 10 months younger than you.
With the days getting longer and the weather getting warmer, the Canby Wild Hare's expansive outdoor patio is the place to be. Furry friends, welcome.
Well, that sounds great. I'm going to go check them out just off of Highway 99E next to the Space Age in Canby at 1656 Beaver Creek Road in Oregon City or on their website at thewildhairsaloon.net.
Hey, Frankie, what are you doing?
I'm trying to figure out which TV option I want to use when DirectLink turns off their video services in January of next year. It's so confusing. Do you know there's about 40 million streaming services to choose from? Which devices do they work on? What channels do they offer?
No, I did not know that. But you do realize that you're probably better off than you think. If you have DirectLink's Easy Video TV now, you're already using a streaming service. But listen. You don't have to go this alone. DirectLink is actually helping their members transition to their next video provider. The company has an extensive informational website where you can compare popular services, and they host live tutorials on streaming TV options to help you decide.
Well, hold the phone. Are you saying that they're actively trying to help their members switch to a competing service? Who does that?
Well, DirectLink does. I mean, I guess it's one more chapter in their long history of wanting the best for our community. They've actually offered free classes for the past 12 years that teach our neighbors about the latest technology and internet security practices. And don't forget, they also orchestrated that popular bingo game last year that helped keep everyone entertained and connected during the lockdowns. They've also launched special programs to help keep our students connected at home during the pandemic and partnered with the city of Canby to give free Wi-Fi year-round at three local parks for locals and visitors alike.
Wait, DirectLink does all that?
They do indeed, and that's on top of providing the best and most reliable internet and voice services in town. So, to learn more about DirectLink services or how they can help you transition to the right video service for your home, visit directlink.coop today.
Now Hear This Canby is produced by me, Tyler Clausen. Our content director and star reporter is Tyler Frankie. And of course, our show is edited by Cameron Clausen. We also feature the vocal talents of Joy Struby and James Walden. So a round of applause to them. The song that you're hearing right now is Canby by singer-songwriter Olivia Harms, used with her permission. To find more work from her, you can visit her website olivia13.com.
Now Hear This Canby is dedicated to preserving independent local journalism and redefining local news with our fun, fresh, and energetic brand of storytelling. Our sincere thanks to our local sponsors who make this show possible. Please show your appreciation by supporting the small businesses who support us.
The production of Now Hear This Studios, Canby's locally owned, full-service audio, video, and media production company. Our mission is to produce the best content in the universe. And we'd love to help you do it. Find us online at nhtstudios.com.
I will take a motion to adjourn.
I just moved it.
I didn't even ask for it, though.